Yo, what's good, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Vitamin C's with me, your boy, Adam Taylor. As usual, I'm joined by my homie, my compadre, my co-host in crime, Mr. Tim Shields. What's popping, Tim?
Well, I was chilling and then kind of everything blew up. Feel like everything just kind of gets crazy, especially towards the trade deadline. But the big deadline news so far, Kyrie Irving officially traded. Officially official, as one would say.
Honestly, I couldn't care.
I care more about the ramifications. I still think the funniest thing was teams reaching out to the Nets. They're like, oh, so like, are you interested in Kyrie? They're like, no, like, how's KD feel about all this? Like, how's Durant doing? Can like we talk to him?
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, like, I think my outlook on it is he's moved out of the Eastern Conference. The biggest ramification for the Celtics is a team that projected to be one of a serious contender. They'd figured it out, right? Jack Vaughn goes there after they move on from Steve Nash. They start becoming like they start showing signs of being a legitimate force in the East. They start stringing off wins. KD's playing well. Kyrie's playing well. Depth was an issue, but you could have always shored that up a little bit. KD gets hurt. Kyrie continues to be Kyrie. Actually, like distraction-free, scandal-free basketball for a hot minute. I started thinking, man, it's not just Milwaukee you need to be concerned with. You need to keep an eye on Brooklyn as well, especially when the postseason rolls around. The biggest ramification for me, it's Brooklyn. Brooklyn are no longer, in my opinion, a genuine threat now. Obviously, when you've got KD, you cannot be ignored. You're still going to be a force, but KD is one man. Do you know what I mean? There's a reason teams like to have two stars, sometimes even three stars, depending on what type of brand of basketball they subscribe to. So for me, the biggest ramification for Boston is, hey, we only have to really focus on Milwaukee at this point.
Yeah, it's going to allow teams to load up on KD defensively. And that was already an issue, you know, previously when guys were in and out of the lineup. I mean, KD almost single-handedly, while the Nets were super, super injured. I mean, he was one sneaker length away from, you know, going to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Bucks. And obviously, you know, it's a different situation now. Even with Kyrie back, you know, you're still trying to figure out how you're playing. You know, Jock Vaughn came in and really established that team's defense. Like, they just didn't have it before. And they took massive strides in improving. So it did feel like the Nets were going to be in that mix. And now it's a completely different story. I felt like the damage was sort of done with Kyrie because of all of the chaos that led into this season, all of the stuff off the court, all these problems. You pile up the injuries, you pile up all of the COVID stuff. And then, you know, the tweet that just set everything off for him in terms of that, you know, discourse that happened from that. And he sort of made it impossible for the Nets to say, yeah, we can sign you to this big contract. So I don't know how they could have gone in and had a conversation in good faith about signing this extension. Like, I don't know what Kyrie expected from the Nets. Like, he started to get on his good behavior, but it was after the damage was already done. Like,
yeah, I mean,
that's the problem.
I mean, look, the thing for me is Kyrie hands in a trade request. He's gone within 3 days. KD hands in a trade request. They're like, no, dude, you're not going anywhere.
Because he's under contract.
Exactly. And it's not just that, like, you try with Kyrie being a flight risk at the end of the season. Yeah, you try and get something back in return. Now, let's be honest, the return package, Spencer Dinwiddie, he hasn't really been himself recently. He's okay. Dorian Finney-Smith, I'm a big fan of Dorian Finney-Smith. I think he could be a good piece for them. A 2029 first round pick. Okay, cool. Kyrie is most likely not going to be there in 2029. And then I think it's a 2027 and a 2029 second round pick or something like that.
Correct. Yeah.
Like, that's all off memory as well, so please credit me there.
I will.
I'm just like, nah, dude, whatever. Like, it was a... I mean, we spoke about this and we could touch on this in a minute, resetting the trade market. But for me, I'm like, the biggest thing now for Boston is you've just got to hope that KD isn't on Ben Simmons' case and Ben Simmons becomes more aggressive attacking the hoop. Because then, all of a sudden, you've got this guy that as many... I know that people are like, oh, Ben Simmons sucks, he can't shoot. The dude is one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA and one of the most gifted passers in the NBA. During his earlier years, he was also exceptionally good at getting to the rim, you know, and forcing defensive collapses. Now, if you can get Ben Simmons doing that And now you've got Joe Harris, Kevin Durant, and Finney Smith around the perimeter, and he's just driving. Obviously, he scores some to keep that gravity there and starts kicking out. Boston might have a few issues they need to figure out. You know, that's highly unlikely. So I'm not concerned. From a Boston standpoint, yeah, you know, you might be able to try and pick some bare bones there. Maybe you start being floated in Kevin Durant rumors again and you have to deal with that. And, you know, that is what it is. At the end of the day, that's for Brad Stevens to deal with. The only thing is it could start. You don't want that to rock the boat, right? The boat's already a little bit creaky, as we'll speak about in a bit. Yeah, I'm cool with it. I just think as we spoke about, and I'll let you kind of hit on this, it's reset the trade market, and that could be beneficial for the Celtics at the end of the season. Not so much now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a palate cleanser, right? Because it changes the way that teams are going to go out there, because Kyrie is an expiring contract. There's no guarantee that he signs unless you offer him. Clearly, he needs a 4 or 5 year max contract. So that going into that situation, knowing all of the bad press that he's had on himself and brought on the organization in the past, you know, few months just for Brooklyn, even if you want to go further back, it gets worse and worse. But Dallas now has to make this decision in the offseason of how they're going to move forward with that. And still, you look at that asking price, what the final return was for the Nets in that trade. And it's not overwhelming. It's not like it was with Rudy Gobert. And shout out to Danny Ainge once again, going in and absolutely fleecing Minnesota in that trade. And that really destroyed the trade market. Like some of these guys now that you saw some of the offers out there, right? Like I think Sadiq Bey, the Pistons were looking for like a first round pick. I don't think that's going to happen. Like that's just not going to be there. I thought it was a ridiculous asking price before. It's just not going to happen now. I just don't see it unless it's highly protected way in the future. And then if it doesn't convey, then it turns into like second rounders or something like that, if at all. But it's good because it's a palate cleanser for everybody else in the market. This makes trades a little bit easier to go through. And we're going to start to see some more stuff shake out from this. I think it's just kind of a given. I know a lot of teams were monitoring the Raptors, but now the Nets are going to definitely be in the spotlight too. And you've already got Chris B. Haynes saying that, you know, the Suns are going to be monitoring the Kevin Durant situation to see if he becomes available. So, you know, teams are going to start lurking. And if they do end up moving KD, and they shouldn't be in a rush to do it, but if he does demand he wants out, you know, it's going to make the rest of the season really uncomfortable for Brooklyn. So that,
yeah, but that's Brooklyn's problem.
Yeah, but I mean, it does affect the trade market, right? Because I think if there's, you know, if you wanted to try and go in and scoop a bench scorer like, you know, TJ Warren, or if a team wants to go after a guy like Seth Curry, like that gets a little bit more sticky if they're not able to blow it up, or, you know, they try and convince, hey, KD, we're going to retool a little bit here and see what we can add in order to try and make this team a little bit more competitive. It adds more layers and wrinkles to this trade deadline as they go towards it, because it's going to bring out about rumors. And I think that's a fair thing to worry about from a Celtics perspective. Like I don't think that they're going to get involved, but you know that their name's going to come up because of the history between the organizations, you know, the previous rumors that were going on in the summer, you know, concerns about Jaylen Brown and all of that stuff. Like, it's just going to rear its head. So like, if the Celtics are going to have legitimate interest, they're going to have to do it, in my opinion. Like, if you're going to show any interest at all, like, it has to be all in. Because
if, so that's the question. If you personally, would you trade? Let's say the Nets were like, right, we want Jaylen Brown, a future first, and I don't know, like a salary filler, Gallo
and JB make the money work.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, for that type of package, right? Nothing past that. It's just JB, a filler, and a future first for KD. Would you do that deal?
I feel like I'd have to. Like, I for a multitude of reasons, right? Like, just in terms of just player comparison, Kevin Durant's better than Jaylen Brown. And unless Jaylen Brown takes some insane leap in his game, that's always going to be the case. Now, you have to worry about injuries with Kevin Durant. I totally understand that being a fair concern, but he's not going to be a flight risk. He's under contract. You know, you're getting to pair him with Jason Tatum. Like, those guys are going to be trading fours in the playoffs. Like, that's what that would be like. And that would be That would make for some really beautiful basketball. I don't think I could ever imagine a better running mate for Jason Tatum. But again, there's the optics of it. Does that destroy the chemistry? Does that destroy the locker room? How are things going now? Does this throw a whole wrench into it? How does this kind of shape the rest of the season for the Celtics? And that's where I think things would get interesting, because you don't want to, you've got a good thing. Like, it's not broke. There have been issues, and we're going to get into that with their offense and their defense, you know, kind of like the sliders going in opposite directions. But you do have to worry about the long-term ramifications of showing any kind of interest in making that volume of a deal. Like, that's a pretty big move to be making in the middle of a season where you're the first seed in the East.
The thing is, not like KD's just a better offensive player, right? He's a better defender as well.
Yeah.
Right? KD's just, it's a different level. Now, the worry is KD's nowhere near as healthy as what Jaylen Brown is on a consistent basis. He's older, but he's also under contract longer. If I was Boston and that opportunity came and that was the type of deal they were looking at, even if it was a couple of firsts, a couple of picks, I don't care, but make it happen. You start adding like Rob or Grant into that package, and now it's getting a little bit too expensive for me.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, because it's going to be bought up, especially if KD is like, well, there's no chance I'm winning here now. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I want out. And then Boston, if I was Boston, I'd be seriously considering that. I know Jaylen Brown's having a really good year, but is this as high as his value is ever going to be? That's a question you need to ask.
If JB is
at his current peak in terms of trade value, and this is, and like, you know, he's in his prime at this point, this is who he is as a player, there's going to be improvements, but they're not going to be drastic at this point now. If this is the prime and like that's it, his trade value is this high, and you can get a return of Kevin Durant and a 2-year, maybe 3-year title window, you have to do that. I know they've got a title window right now, but KD just kind of opens it wider for those few years. And obviously, we don't know if that's going to happen, but I just wanted to ask the question because I felt like we were beating around the bush.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, right? And like, it always is going to water down to that. If you talk about Kevin Durant or trading for any kind of superstar, you're like, all right, well, I'm not moving Jason Tatum. And I feel like you can't move Marcus Smart because he's so important to this team's defense. He's been a massive impact on their offense and how they flow. One of their better playmakers. But then you look at the situation where it's like they're going to ask for the best piece available. And if it's not Jason Tatum, it's going to be Jaylen Brown. And like, that's where it's always going to get sticky in any kind of trade talk. It's just not, it's unrealistic to expect them to, it's damn near impossible for them to make that kind of level of a trade without including him. And that's,
and I'm okay with that. Look, I understand like Jaylen Brown is a really, really, really good player. Mm-hmm. He's not a top 10 guy. Kevin Durant is. It's that simple. Right, moving on. I want to talk about a player that's actually on the Celtics right now.
Fair.
If anyone follows me on Twitter, they've probably seen me going back and forth with people for the past 48 hours.
Because, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah. Very disappointed in myself for buying into the arguments. But here we are, you know. There's a lot of people saying that Grant Williams needs to be traded, and you can get an upgrade on Grant Williams. Now, first question I have is, what upgrade? Considering Grant Williams' contract, considering where the Celtics are financially, also keeping in mind that you cannot put a TPE on top of a contract. You can't be like, Grant makes $5 million, we've got a $5.6 million TPE, let's go and get a $10.6 million player. That don't work. You either use the player's salary or the TPE. You can't combine the two to make a larger number. So keeping that in mind, I just don't think there's a trade out there that builds on what Grant gives you. You know, I've seen some people be like Naz Reid, and I'm like, dude, I feel like I've started the entire Naz Reid thing now. I don't know if that's a little bit of make character syndrome or something creeping in. But I remember
we did talk about it a while ago.
And now his name's floating around, right? And you know, maybe it's a coincidence, whatever. But I've had people be like, Naz Reid's an upgrade. I'm like, but Naz Reid isn't a 3-and-D wing. Like, you're telling me Naz Reid's an upgrade and he'd play better in Grant Williams' role, but Naz Reid is a 33% three-point shooter. That's fine when you're playing the five, when you're playing the four and the three, that don't work. So I'm just like, I don't know where the upgrade is. I actually think Grant has wildly improved his game throughout the offseason and coming into the season. He's scoring off the bounce. He's attacking out of the corners. You know, he waits for those closeouts, then drives hard. He's shown an ability to create for himself a little bit with those fake dribble handoffs or with attacking closeouts above the perimeter. He's flashed a bit of an improved post game. And he's defending at a better rate and he's defending some opposing team's best players. He's also got a very good track record against some of the bigs that you'd expect to see if you got into a deep playoff run. He's got a good track record on Jokic. If it ends up being a Boston-Denver finals, you feel comfortable with Grant going on Jokic. He's got a good track record against Embiid.
And Giannis to a degree.
And Giannis, this is what I'm saying, right? So now all of a sudden, three of the significantly talented big men in the NBA, Grant Williams, is proven to be able to hang with them defensively. And when you're telling me you can upgrade for, what's Grant on this year, like 4.8 mil?
I could pull up the exact number.
Yeah, put it up while I'm talking. It's around about that. It's a low number. You're telling me there's a player out there that's going to upgrade on both sides of the floor and give you the three-point shooting, the 40% three-point shooting, are going to give you the defense, like elite-level defense on some of the best bigs in the NBA, and going to give you an ability to attack off the dribble a little bit, to run some fake DHO actions. He's a really good screener, a willing screener. He's strong, he's sturdy, he's good at flipping angles on his screens too. If you can find me a guy that does all that, and he's better at it all than Grant, cool, but I just don't think it's there right now. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. Just at the price point the Celtics are at, I just don't see it being there.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting paid $4.3 million.
I was close.
Yeah, you were damn close. I think the issue that I have is obviously worrying about free agency. He's definitely going through a slump. Do I think he can break out of it? Sure. I think him struggling right now sort of highlights a lot of the issues that the Celtics are having. Like when their offense goes stagnant and guys just aren't knocking down shots, it's really killing them. And I don't think that's entirely on him, but it's the same thing that happens like with Sam Hauser, right? Like when all of a sudden these guys who are hitting their shots aren't hitting their shots, the offense stops working. And that's what it is for most teams. Like if guys start slumping, they start slumping. And I don't think that means that you hit the panic button with Grant. I really don't. I understand that he is one of your better trade chips. If you're thinking that there's any chance that he doesn't come back, then you try and move him at the deadline for a player that helps you, a player that's under contract, that brings something to the table. I wouldn't move him for Naz Reid.
Here's where I differ with that mentality, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about making trades and stuff on to anyone right now, the answer is, hey, you do what you need to do to win a championship.
Yeah.
Right. You don't trade Peyton Pritchard right now because he gives you the depth to win a championship. Well, yeah. Then at the same time, you have to be like, you're not really upgrading Grant Williams at $4.3 million in salary matching. So guess what? You risk losing him for nothing at the end of the season to give yourself a chance to win a championship. That's my outlook on it.
And I think that's totally fair. I mean, there's only a couple other guys that I would consider that I would, you know, slide into that same spot that you've got Grant in. Like Jared Vanderbilt makes a lot of sense to me.
He's young.
He's a great defender. And I think that's like one of those ones where it's like, you know, you're going to have to worry about free agency, but you have one more year of control. So you wouldn't have to worry about signing him in the offseason. You'd have one more year after that. He's hitting about $4.37 million.
The problem roughly is who becomes a free agent at the end of next season.
Yeah, exactly. So that ties into the conversation about KD as well, where you talk about contract control. And that's really what it is, you know, you're going to pay a tax. You're paying a tax regardless, just because you're trying to win a championship. And Wick Grausbeck has come out and said, you know, this is load up this year, do whatever you got to do. So I can see them going deep into the tax, but you know, I don't think that they get better by trading Grant unless it's a significant upgrade. And then again, if it's a significant upgrade, you need to match that salary. And
it's not there. There's no price.
You're talking about multiple pieces. You're talking about throwing Gallinari in a trade. And unless it's for a guy like Kevin Durant, where it's like, okay, understandable, you're going to have this optic of trading a guy who's injured, who wanted to play for this organization, signed there as a free agent. Like it's not a good look. Like if you're going to move on from a guy, it needs to be a surefire thing. It needs to really just like knock the cover off the ball. And I just don't see there any kind of deal that's going to, you know, materialize like that.
And let me just kind of defend myself here. I'm not saying that, and I'm not saying you've said this, but I, just so everyone listening or watching can understand or just appreciate what I'm saying. Look, I'm not saying Grant Williams is irreplaceable. I'm not saying he's the best small, like undersized, big wing, whatever you want to classify him as in the league. I'm not saying that. What I am saying, he's among the best 3 and D wings in the league right now. Plays to 3, plays to 4. I classify 1 and 2 as guards, 3 and 4 as wings, 5 as a big. That's how I do it. Some people classify 4 and 5 as bigs, fine. But when I say wings, I always mean 3 and 4. So he's a 3 and D wing with the ability to slide up and play some small ball 5, right? He's one of the best in the league at his role. He's not the best. PJ Tucker probably still owns that, but he's declining quite quickly. So what I'm saying is, I would much rather have a chance of winning a championship this year and risk losing him for nothing at the end of the season than I would trading him away and being worse as you go into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think that's a totally fair point to have. I think the only instance where I move him is if it's a part of like a bigger deal that brings in someone who is like a surefire under contract, is in the same echelon as Grant. And I just don't, it's really hard because those guys that are in that same echelon that you'd want to trade for, they're not necessarily available. It takes two teams to tango with that stuff. So it's just, it's always sticky when it comes to those kind of trades. Half the time you got to understand what's realistic, what's not realistic, what's possible with the cap sheet, what teams are willing to do. And does that go up because, you know, he is going to be a restricted free agent. You're going to get his rights if you traded for him and so on and so forth. But I think the discourse around Grant is kind of misplaced at this point. Like, he's not the reason why they're struggling. He's part of it. And it's just, guys just got to, I think this, you know, this all-star break is going to help guys. I think they just need to take a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, players always tend to slump as we enter February, end of January into the start of February. They've been playing nonstop since October, and then everybody gets a bit of time off, you know? Yeah. So I don't read too much into the slumps because I just expect them. I expect, like, nobody's, like, consistency is great, and I understand it's the holy grail of being a superstar in the NBA. And there's a reason there's so few superstars because of how hard it is to be that consistent. And even those superstars, everybody slumps. It's normal. You don't have weeks at work where you're like, man, it's been a bad week. Just, you know, I haven't hit my deadlines, or so everything I've done hasn't really worked out. You know, everybody slumps at everything. Even when you're driving, I have weeks where I'm just like, dude, I just haven't had it this week driving. Do you know what I mean? Parking's been a bit more difficult, or, you know, maybe I've had to swerve because I've mistimed pulling out. You know what I mean? Like, it happens. So I just kind of think that, you know, you kind of have to take the good with the bad, especially if a fourth-year guy. Like, everyone forget he's only been in the league 4 years.
They've got him flagged also as the replacement for Al Horford. I'm pretty sure that was Steve Bolpet who said that in his article for Heavy, that they've got him. They're going to get a contract figured out in the offseason. If anything, this slump's going to make it a little bit easier to go to the negotiations and say, well, look, you kind of.
Well, you say that unless it goes off in the playoffs a couple of times.
Yeah. And, you know, if he does and it ends in a championship, I could care less.
But that's where my arguments have been, right?
Exactly.
Like, everyone's making a decision, like a financial decision for him based on his play in January, when really, it's his play in the summer that makes a difference. Right, so let's move on. The last one I've got is the Celtics. Are the Celtics slumping? So here's another disagreement I've had. I believe that I put out earlier, and I probably misworded this. I was like, the Celtics have been dominant all season, not in terms of play, but in terms of record. So I've had some pushback. People are saying, would have dropped to 16 games. Losing 16 times isn't dominant. That's completely fair. Can't argue. What I will say is, when you've had the best record in the league pretty much since day one, you know, you might be tied now, but you've still tied for the best record in the league. You've been dominant because guess what? From day one till now, you've been the best team. That's being dominant, you know? But things have turned. So since the Celtics played the Phoenix Suns on December 8th, this is there. Okay. And I'm using cleaning the glass, so it filters out garbage time. So it might be slightly different to if you look on NBA.com, but I prefer cleaning the glass. The Celtics since December 8th through to today, which is the February 5th, are 19th in offensive rating, but they're third in defensive rating. So as we said earlier, it's like that sliders, right? I like to think of it as the elevator, as the offense is coming down, as the defense is coming up.
How the turntables.
Now, this is a team that was historically good offensively at the start of the year. Couple of notes. Marcus Smart's out. He has been out. He's been in and out. Jaylen Brown's missed time. They're reintegrating Robert Williams. They've gone from a single big starting lineup back to a double big. So the pace has slowed down a little bit because of that. They're running some sets that they ran last year that they didn't run while Rob wasn't there. It's taking its time, right? The Celtics last year did play at a slower pace because they kind of ground possessions and they found the right shot. Mazzulla prefers them to be fast. They've obviously gone back to this double big and kind of fell back into the offensive like pace that they dominated with last year, but they're running sets this year under Mazzulla that require pace, and it just hasn't clicked yet. So 19th in the NBA, they're averaging 114.7 points per 100 possessions. But they're only giving up 111.7. So they're winning games, you know, but my argument is, and I've said this many a time, I'm very big on balance. There's no point being a top five defensive team if you're a bottom 10 offense, because you can stop people scoring, but you can't put up enough to score yourself, you know? The other point being is, it was the same when they were offensively good and defensively bad. You cannot guarantee. Shot variance is a real thing. You can't come into a game guaranteeing that the ball is going to fall. You know, at least you can come in and guarantee defensive effort's going to be there. But you need, if you want to be an NBA Finals team, you realistically need to be top 10 in both offense and defense. And the Celtics are 9 spots off of that. If we want to look at that, bear with me, let me just load it up. So the Celtics are 19th, 114.7. If they want to be top 10, they need to score an extra, just under, so let's just round it up, they need to score an extra 3 points per 100 possessions. It's that close. It's just a Jason Tatum three-pointer that drops extra a game, and they're 10th. So I'm not saying that their offense is miles away, but there's definitely been some stagnation. I think since Marcus Smart's been out, the ball movement's kind of started to stagnate a little bit. They're putting it in Jaylen Brown's hands a bit more than what I'd like. In terms of creation, I'm not a fan, haven't been a fan, caught a lot of heat for that over the years. I'd much rather see them give it to Derek White, who's a connector that gets off the ball quite quickly. I like Brogdon as a scoring guy, but I also think he has a tendency to over-dribble sometimes. So, you know, Tatum, I'd to be honest with you, with Marcus out, I'd ask Robin Al to do a bit more creation, do some inside-outside post-creation there. Mm-hmm. I just think they're over-relying on wing creation right now, and that's hurting them a lot.
Yeah, and I think this is where that massive gap, that Marcus Smart-shaped hole in the offense is so clear. And it's crazy looking back and saying that he wasn't a good fit for this team or wasn't the point guard that they needed, because now you see this offense when he's missing games. On the season, they're 7-5 in games that Marcus Smart doesn't play. And over this 6-game stretch, I think they're 2-4 without him, and they've scored under 100 points in 3 of those 6 games. So like the offense is struggling, and you see like where the passing, just when the passing goes off and they get those looks that they need, they're lighting teams up. A really good example of that, and I know this is, again, you're taking the highs and the highs, but that Nets game, they moved the ball so well. They were passing it. And you can tell. Well, and when it was dropping, like it's one of those things, like that Nets game, they won, and they, you know, you had Brown and Tatum both go 7-12.
Sorry, I thought he was on about the Suns. I'm thinking back.
No.
The Nets game, it was dropping.
But the Suns is a perfect example of it. They scored under 100 points and they looked really bad.
But who was a primary creator off the dribble?
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown. And I'm not saying that he's like, you know,
both him and Tatum looked bad in that game.
Yeah, Tatum wasn't great either, but Tatum has proven capable of being a point forward. I just think Brown, I've got no problem with you using him as a playmaker. I just think it needs to be a much smaller sample size, like a much smaller amount, you know? And if that means Al Horford needs to initiate more as a big in the delay, then fine. If you need to initiate more with Rob on the post, then fine. Derek White is also he's a secondary initiator, but I like Derek White getting on the ball to move it quite quickly. overall, I think they just needed to play at a higher pace. They just looked sluggish. You know, when the Celtics play slow, they're very deliberate. They're very easily read. Smart does a really good job there of kind of like when he slows it down, it's because he knows what he wants to do. And then he waits for the action to unfold. He doesn't force it. I think Tatum and Brown were both forcing the actions too early. And it just ran, they ran themselves into Brooklyn, into Phoenix's traps.
Yeah, and I think Phoenix was playing with a lot of defensive intensity, with a lot of energy. Boston whooped
them, dude. Last time they played, the Celtics slapped them around.
They remembered, and they also had to play harder because they didn't have Devin Booker, too. And I think
they had Chris Paul, and you know, they were playing drop on Chris Paul, and I'm like, Chris Paul's a mid-range savant, dude. Why are you playing drop on Chris Paul?
Not great.
That's like going under on Steph.
Well, and also just with the double bigs, like both Rob and Al are very capable passers. If you're not taking advantage of them when you're starting them together like that, what are you doing? Because they're both really, really good. And if you don't have playmaking, you know, you need to lean on them. I don't know why they didn't.
In fairness, MA never did that either.
Yeah, but...
And that was a knock I had on MA as well. Like, you know, you got two of the best passing big men in the league. Obviously, they're not the best. They're not Jokic or so forth. But, I mean, they're not even Nurkic. Nurkic is a ridiculously good passer. Apparently, Nurkic is available for trade right now.
But that salary's big, isn't it? And he's got injury concerns.
I was about to say the injury's bigger. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, you know, they're not elite passing bigs, but they're up there. And you're not running the ball through them when you're down one of your best creators. It is a problem. But overall, I just kind of want to say that the Celtics, I'm going to write about this tomorrow as well. So Monday when this comes out, I'll be writing about it. But there needs to be more balance, because if there isn't, if they don't strike that balance, everything they've worked towards this season could quickly become very, very difficult to achieve.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately what they have to do going into the deadline, is trying to find this balance as you're getting out of the All-Star break, just trying to reestablishing those principles that got you to where you were so far this year. Like, they'd started to slip a little bit. Obviously, that Warriors game back in December, and the run that came after it in terms of how they were playing, really exposed how, you know, how to defend that team. And now it's, okay, how do we recapture some of that? How do we recapture our confidence on offense? How do we keep the ball moving? And how do we find that healthy balance between playing, you know, balls to the wall defense and, you know, this fast paced offense? Because they just got to find a way to find that balance. Because if they do too much of one thing, it's clearly affecting the other negatively. So everything in moderation, I say.
The Miyagi Do outlook on basketball: find your balance. When you find balance, everything else falls into place. Mm-hmm. I like Cobra Kai. Just so we're out there, I just need to put that out there.
I've watched
the entire thing, season 1 to 5, 4 times.
It's wrapping up now, isn't it? It's got one more season.
Yeah, but I'll watch that about 5 times. I've watched every Karate Kid movie at least 10 times. I'm a big Karate Kid guy. Don't like karate, I think, but you know, I like more modern combat sports. But anyway, we're getting off the point. Everybody, if you've enjoyed this show, make sure you hit that subscribe button. Make sure that if you're listening on an audio feed, go and tweet it out, man. Share the love for us. We're pushing it as hard as we can. But the more you do, the better it is for everybody. You know what I'm saying? And we'll be back again on Wednesday, because I'm not jet lagged anymore. So, you know, I'm back. Tim, it's been good chatting it up with you, bro. Everybody, make sure to share, like, subscribe, do the show the love. And we'll catch you again soon. Peace.
Cheers.